Good afternoon. It's 1:40 Wednesday, March 18th. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland, home of world-class racing and industry-leading sales. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Bill Finley along with John Green, who you'll talk to in just a minute. We are here in the offices of the TDN, Red Bank, New Jersey. An eerie feeling. Offices are all but empty, but we march on, try to make the best of things.
Absolutely. And we need to march on just like the world does. We're just a small portion of what's going on out there. But needless to say, I've been implementing social distancing for almost my entire 50 years of my life.
All those nights without a date. That was you preparing for this. So, I mean, as you can tell off the bat, this is going to be a different kind of episode, and I think it's going to be that way for a little bit. I'm calling in to the studio. It's amazing how much the world can change in a week, because we recorded exactly a week ago, and I remember coming out of the studio, we were all amped up about the show we did, and we got the news that March Madness would be conducted without fans, which just seemed crazy at that time. That seemed like an incredibly extreme measure, but little did we know that that would be the least of it, because later that night, the NBA season was canceled or postponed and suspended. Hockey followed soon after, and then baseball and March Madness was eventually canceled. And these are kind of the cultural touchstones that we have through sports, and it's such a reliable backdrop for our lives that when there are no sports to be seen, and that really, I think, drives home for a lot of people how interrupted life is going to be because of this. And it's just gotten even more dire. And, you know, the predictions have gone from 2 to 3 week interruptions to 2 to 3 month interruptions. And I think that's kind of what's freaking everybody out right now, and rightfully so, is the uncertainty of this. And the worst has not hit America for the most part yet. And it's just, we're going to have to, you know, buckle down for a little bit here. And, you know, as much as we can help in bringing the world the sweet content that it needs, we will do our best, and I hand it over to you guys.
Well, thanks, Joe. And, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of issues this week, including the postponement, I'm sure, of the Kentucky Derby. And as I've been covering the story for the TDN, and this comes on the heels of what we thought was the biggest story of our lifetimes in horse racing, and then the drug trainers, et cetera, and then 4 or 5 days later, it might even be eclipsed by what's going on now. So, but I think it's important to keep things in perspective about what we're talking about here. And I'll adhere now to two trainers that I talked to this week, Patrick Biancone and Bob Baffert, when I called them to find out what they thought about the Kentucky Derby being postponed. You know, frankly, horse trainers are known not to really think or feel much about what goes on in the world outside of them, you know, an insular world of horse racing, and they breathe, sleep horse racing 24/7. And I called Baffert and I called Patrick Biancone, who both have a couple of Derby contenders, and both of them pretty much said the same thing, and I'm paraphrasing, is, I really don't care that the Kentucky Derby's been postponed this year. This is a sporting event. It's a minor thing in the history of mankind and what's going on in the human race right now. I'm concerned about my health. I'm concerned about this country. I'm concerned about keeping my health safe. And, you know, they really hit the button there. Of course, we're going to talk about horse racing, and we're going to talk about the Derby and maybe the Louisiana Derby that will be run this weekend. But we can't lose our perspective. Horse racing is just the most minorest thing in the world right now. And we're living through probably the scariest thing that has happened to any of us in our lifetimes.
Yeah, you know, you have to keep everything in perspective, Bill. You're exactly right. And pandemic or not, doing the right things, making sure that you're following the CDC rules and suggestions is of paramount importance. And you know, just to go back to what you were saying before about, we thought that we were hitting on the biggest story of our respective careers. And I was taking notes all week and saying, wow, I can't believe the 27 people were indicted and all these things going on. And then on top of it, there were, you know, more people indicted on money laundering, which I think the FBI actually alluded to in the initial press conference as to that was the reason why they were even looking into the industry. And then you get some sales that are canceled, and you get some races that are canceled, and all of a sudden it goes from being, well, it's a kind of a flu, to, well, you maybe want to take some precautions, and if you're not feeling well, stay home, all the way to where it's full blown into this almost police state that we're living in. And I know sports and recreations are there to try to get people to take their minds off these things, which I think is why we're all here right now talking about horse racing. It's just to give everyone a little bit of a respite from all the stress that's going on out there.
And I just, it kind of reminds me, honestly, I've never seen anything like this in my life. I doubt you guys have either. The other thing that I thought of was 9/11, but that was, I don't know, for most of the country, I think that was something that they mostly saw on TV. You know, growing up in New York, obviously, it was a difficult thing, but that's for most of the country. I don't think there was a major interruption of life as we knew it. I think you have to go all the way back to World War II, basically, and when society changed and sports were canceled. So this is something that we haven't seen in a long, long time. And like I said, I think the uncertainty of it is what's really riling people up, and we don't know how bad it's going to be. But again, like John said, I think it's really important to listen to the scientists on this and listen to the doctors and not necessarily politicians. Listen to the people who you know have studied and prepared for this kind of event. And I think that's the best way forward. But you know, as far as we're concerned, it's obviously going to be a more subdued podcast going forward, which is why I'm glad I got all the yelling out of my system last week. So I think I should be properly sedated now. For these issues.
I will say that 4 out of 5 CDC members recommend listening to the TDN podcast.
All right, we got to work on that fifth one.
Yeah, exactly. That's a little known fact, though. That'll be coming out in one of the CDC tweets soon.
It'll be like buried at the bottom of a CDC press release. Take 2 TDN writers' rooms and call us in the morning.
Very nice.
But yeah, so it's obviously going to be different for all of us going forward, and I think this is definitely a time where, you know, people got to watch out for each other and take care of each other, especially the more vulnerable people in our society, including like the elderly and the immunosuppressed. I think this is, you know, honestly, I have to admit that I was out Friday night. I had to meet somebody, and I went to a bar for a couple of drinks, and I was shocked. I was shocked at how many people were out. And I think that, again, like sports, like that changed very, very quickly. I think there was sufficient shame for people that were going out and getting together in clusters on Friday and Saturday. And, you know, eventually here in New Jersey, Hoboken and Jersey City have closed the bars down. New York is doing the same thing. So it's one of those things where I think, you know, especially local governments have to intervene, because otherwise people are going to treat this as a usual thing. And it's not that.
I think it'd be appropriate to now talk about how this has affected horse racing. And, you know, there's so many different answers to that. But, you know, one of the things, based on what you were just talking about, Joe, about how, you know, all these sporting events are canceled, you can't go to a bar anymore, you can't go to a restaurant, et cetera. Horse racing is extremely unique in American society right now, is that some, not all, but some, including some very prominent racetracks like Gulfstream Park, Aqueduct, Fairgrounds, are going to try to continue to race through this coronavirus crisis. And, you know, we sit around all these years and joke about how nobody goes to the track anymore, and there's 15 people at Aqueduct on a Thursday. Well, you know what? Right now, that's a darn good thing, because this is an enterprise, at least from the racing standpoint, that will suffer, but not to the point of, you know, losing, you know, terrible numbers in handle or just, you know, being really in a mess, can handle operating through a crisis like this, because virtually, you know, what's the figure, 90%, 92%, whatever it is, of the gambling and wagering on racing takes effect outside the racetracks. And most of us now, you know, don't think of ever making a bet if it's not on our computer. So, you know, I guess I wouldn't even say it's good news. I don't want to say anything is good news with what's going on right now, but it does position horse racing rather uniquely. And, you know, there is that to be happy for.
No, I think you're spot on. Hey, you know, right now when the majority of gambling is going on outside of the racetracks, outside of the four walls, it hasn't, based on the numbers, it hasn't impacted the sport yet. And I know I was talking to a trainer the other day, and he was jokingly saying, "Boy, and I'm really glad that the owners aren't allowed to come to the paddock. This is going to make things a lot easier for us and for the jockeys as well." But I think, you know, one of the important things that I think the Kentucky Derby picked up on is the fact that you have to have something on the calendar. You have to have some of these major races that are initially being postponed, at least have another deadline on or date on the calendar, so that way people can plan and look forward to the future and look for something. Now, that is going to beget a whole bunch of other issues that I'm sure we'll get into later on today, as far as the dates and what's going to happen with the Preakness and the Belmont, and you know, we'll talk about that a little bit later on, but But I think it's imperative, just in living through some of these other, you know, crises that we've talked about, that you need to have something on the calendar to look forward to and prepare for. Otherwise, we're just kind of like banging our heads against the wall.
Yeah, and I think this I agree with both of your points. I think this is an interesting time for racing, and I think it shows kind of what a middle-class game racing is at its heart, because there are a ton of people who aren't making money if the horses don't run, who don't have a reserve for a rainy day, and they need to make a living at these tracks. And it's interesting how a lot, you know, there's a lot of companies, most companies I would say are, including ours, are instituting a work from home policy. Well, these are these guys working from home. Like the backstretch workers, they live with the horses. They take care of the horses day in, day out. And this is, I think, a unique opportunity where people wouldn't think of this as a work from home industry, but it is. And somebody has to be there to take care of the horses. And, you know, I'm glad that it's at least going on for now. Like I wouldn't count any chickens or, you know, think that this is going to be a permanent situation. You never know, especially in New York, if the governor or the mayor will step in and say, look, you can't even do this much. So far, supposedly, New York has gotten the okay from the New York State Gaming Commission that their gatherings aren't 50 plus people at the moment. But I wouldn't bank on that being the case for this entire period, however long this lasts. I mean, it's already affected us with the Derby being pushed back. But it is nice to see racing being able to carry on in the meantime. And this would be a great time if we had it in the business to educate people on how to bet racing. I think that, you know, there's so little competition. I mean, we had that case for a while where we were the only game in town in terms of online wagering, but now we're the only game in town, period. And I think this would be a good time to have broadcasts. Like I'm glad that NBC is simulcasting the TVG broadcast, but this would be a great time to have easy links for free PPs, like basic, very basic past performances that can walk you through how to place a bet, because I think there will be people that'll be open to playing the horses that wouldn't normally. And this is where having free data and very easily accessible data and, you know, easy interfaces, I think, would be a big boon for the industry.
But you raised the right question. So we're talking now about this upcoming weekend with the Louisiana Derby, with several major racetracks running. Right now in horse racing, we haven't heard, at least I haven't heard of anybody getting this virus, be it a trainer, a backstretch worker, a jockey, but it seems inevitable that's going to happen. I mean, if you listen to what the experts are telling us, it's very scary stuff, and it would be hard to believe that an entire industry would somehow escape this. Now, I know everybody in racing is being very careful and, you know, not letting people like the owners congregate around the trainers, et cetera. But, you know, geez, I sure hope I'm wrong about this. But I think that, you know, in 2 weeks from now would be my guess. There's no horse racing in this country. I hope I'm wrong for everybody's sake. But it just seems to be that's where this is headed.
Yeah, that's the inevitable ending to all this, is that if they keep using the term flattening out the curve, if they can't, you know, slow down this pandemic, then you have to assume that our industry is not going to be immune to it. We're dealing with people that that are living in close quarters for the most part on the backstretch, albeit there is a lot of outdoor and fresh air and everything like that. Just odds are it's going to hit somebody within our organization, in our industry, excuse me, and then spread from there. So I think a couple of weeks is probably the right, you know, rule of thumb right now. You know, from a selfish standpoint, I'm glad they're going to be racing this weekend, because we're actually going to be running a couple of horses in stake races at Gulfstream. And to have it on NBC is really cool, especially in light of all the bad news that we've been getting out of the industry for, you know, in recent times. But Bill, I think if you gave me an over under of 10 days, I think that's probably, you know, I would take the under at this point.
Yeah. And I just to go back to the Derby, because I feel like that's, you know, we'll probably have more to talk about, or maybe less to talk about, in the coming weeks. But I think for now, the big news related to the coronavirus and racing is the Derby being pushed back 4 months, which was, that's a good chunk of the calendar. And it just, we're going to go on the assumption that it's going to run that date. Obviously, as developments change and things maybe worsen, that will become less feasible. But for now, we'll go on the assumption that, you know, we'll be in a place where, you know, it's more stable and they can run the Derby on the rescheduled date. And in which case, that creates a pretty big, I don't know, it's a little bit of a mess for the schedule, I guess, and racing wise, you know, all the preps, it seems like will be able to be completed except for the Keeneland race at the Bluegrass. I think New York and Gulfstream and Fairgrounds will most likely be able to complete their Derby prep schedule. So that stuff will be done, but I don't know. Like it seemed like Churchill made this decision pretty unilaterally. I don't think there's a ton of people that are surprised by that, because it seemed as if the Preakness and the Belmont do not have similar contingency plans in place right now. But, you know, if they were able to finagle a schedule, you know, with the Derby being September 5th and then the Preakness being a couple weeks later and the Belmont being a couple weeks later and then leading into the Breeders' Cup, I think that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I think you would have a lot of three-year-olds who maybe are on the shelf now or maybe are, you know, late developing, who will be much stronger and more mature animals, and you might get an even better field if that date comes to pass. But then you have to talk about the Travers, and Saratoga has to adjust. I think Bob Baffert is probably pretty happy with Charlatan, a horse like that, that, you know, he was going to try to, I'm not going to say rush, but, you know, push into the Derby a la Justify. That horse gets more time to develop. I think there's going to be a lot of horses like that. And hopefully on the other side of this, if we do get to run the Derby on this rescheduled date, we might have an even better event than it would have been in May.
Churchill Downs, it does look like they went off on their own without consulting really with Stronach Group for Pimlico and Naira for Belmont. You know, that's kind of what you hear behind the scenes. But they got it right in terms of, if you look at all the moving parts and you say, okay, you know, what's the right date for this? I think the date they pick, September 5th, is virtually perfect. For one thing, it's before college football really gets going. There are games then, but the early season college football games are not a real big deal. That's number one. Number two, obviously NBC told them they could get the race on TV that day. Number three is it's still summer. It's still Labor Day is the end of summer, and people still are eager to be outdoors, to do things and be at big events. And also the fact that, you know, we don't know, but, you know, if they had scheduled it for, say, a month later, well, you could look at it and say, you know, you really want to do that? Is the virus going to be contained at that point so that you can hold the event? Well, that's anybody's guess. But conventional wisdom would say, you know, June, no, not going to happen. But September may not happen, but September is better than June, and certainly better than the first Saturday in May when it comes to trying to pull this thing off. It won't be quite the same, like you said, Joe, from a racing standpoint. I mean, there might be a horse that hasn't even run yet that might win the Kentucky Derby now, so far as the race being in September. But it's gonna hurt the bottom line. I don't think they're going to have a crowd that is quite equal to what normally happens. You know, betting might be off a little bit. But that said, you know, Churchill, I think, did find the best solution, at least for Churchill, for a very difficult problem.
No, you're spot on. I mean, they had to juggle a lot of things and consider a lot of variables in order to pick the date, part of which was, you know, there's two major race meets going on sandwiched around the September 5th weekend. You have the Keeneland meet in October, and then you have the Kentucky Downs meet prior to that, you know, for the summertime, which is always, you know, a big kind of fair meet down there. Ironically enough, in doing some research and reading, one of the reasons why they picked the date, and Bill, you alluded to this before, is that it could be on national television, but it's only because Notre Dame doesn't have a game being televised that day. So it was like either September 5th or sometime in mid-October, which really would have, you know, screwed up the whole timing with the Breeders' Cup. My biggest concern right now, and you guys were talking about this a little bit before, is, you know, there are horses right now that are earning points in all of these preps. And, you know, unlike the Breeders' Cup, where the Breeders' Cup has it set up, there's a point system. Half the field gets into their respective race based on points, and the other half is voted in. Well, there's no such mechanism on the Kentucky Derby. So how are they going to handle this now, where you have all these horses that are earning points right now? And then, as you guys mentioned, there could be a horse coming out of the clouds that maybe just broke his maiden or hasn't even run yet or broken its maiden yet, that may be the superstar surging in August into September, you know, winning the Haskell or winning, you know, a race of that caliber and not being eligible to run in the Kentucky Derby. If there's 20 other horses ahead of them in points, they're going to have to account for that somehow.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're going to have to add points races to the schedule. And I don't know how that's going to break down exactly.
Yeah, what kind of feeding frenzy is that going to be all of a sudden now with the racetrack saying, I think our race needs to be 100 points?
Joe, let me interrupt, and Joe and John, I don't think that's going to be that difficult. I mean, you know the kind of races, and if these races are even going to be held, but, you know, the Haskell is obviously, if it stays where it is now, is obviously going to be a points race for the Kentucky Derby. It's going to be a prep for the Kentucky Derby, and, you know, that's a race worthy of the highest amount of points. You know, if they stick the Iowa Derby somewhere in there, maybe that's a 20-point race or something like that. I think that's the least of their problems. They'll figure that all out. And, you know, I think we'll hear from Churchill within a week or two about, you know, what kind of point schedule they're going to put forward. And, you know, and additionally, you know, horses, you know, tend to go by the wayside. We're also going to see, you know, probably of the top 10, everybody's top 10, I bet you five or six of them won't even be racing now in September. So it's going to be the whole picture. I mean, it's right now impossible to predict or even speculate who's going to be in the Kentucky Derby, who are going to be the main horses. I mean, we assume Baffert's going to be there with some good horses, et cetera. But, you know, absolutely anything is possible at this point.
And horses that have recently just gone on the shelf for various and sundry, you know, minor surgeries or minor issues, all of a sudden could be peaking by the time the summer and fall comes around. Joe, I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but if people were betting the futures and they ended up picking, you know, the field at this point, do they have the field all the way through to September, or like how is that handled right now for people who bet on the futures wager?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about that. I know that they're still honoring future wagers, but I'm not 100% sure on how they're going to handle the field. Because, yeah, that might be the value of the century right now if you're right. Holding a future bet on the field. But, yeah.
Joe, let me jump in on that. There has been no official word from Churchill Downs about the future wager. They have to refund all bets. Absolutely,
you would think so,
100%.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, that would be criminal if they didn't. You know, if you could be sitting there with, if you're sitting there with Nadal at 100-1, sorry, pal, it just, the whole thing is wiped out. And I'm a little bit surprised. I shouldn't say I'm surprised. They've had more important things to deal with. But I would be shocked if they didn't, within the next week or two, say, you know, the future wager is suspended and all bets are refunded. I mean, they have to. That would be really unfair to anybody that bet on it.
You would think it'd be refunded, or at least a future credit, you know, choice. Towards future betting
down
the road.
I think there's no other thing to do than just, you know, like, you know, every once in a while, you know, they cancel the seventh race, a storm comes in and they can't run the eighth and ninth races. You bet on advance, you get your money back. You know, I mean, that's a no-brainer. So that would be terrible if they didn't take care of that.
Right. But then does that all of a sudden open up, just to argue for a second, does that all of a sudden open up a slippery slope where, let's say, we didn't talk about this yet, but let's say one of the horses that ran, you know, suddenly becomes disqualified for, you know, for a drug issue or anything like that, they're not refunding the money on those, you know, bets as well, right?
No, I mean, this is a unique thing. No slippery slope, no questions, no debate. Close it, give everybody their money back. It's very simple.
Slippery slope.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm off behind the slippery slope. All Don't open up Pandora's box.
Yes. All right.
All right.
Joe,
Commissioner
Joe,
Bill Finley has spoken.
Yes. All right, Joe, we're getting out of control here. Take charge, pal.
Well, I wanted to mention just in particular a horse like Tis the Law, because he had a little bit of a minor foot issue earlier in the month, and it seemed like he had to miss a couple weeks of training, and then he got back on the work tab. Now he was scheduled to run in the Florida Derby. I just wonder if maybe with a horse like him now, the Sakatoa guys and Barkley Tag will put him on the shelf for a little bit. I just think there's going to be a lot of shuffling when it comes to horses' schedules, because as time goes on, there's going to be fewer and fewer races to run in. I wonder how it affects that. And, you know, I wonder if, you know, even if racing does go on in limited capacity, I wonder if most of the big horses will be on the farm somewhere as we wait to see this thing sort out.
I hope not, but that is a possibility. But the problem is, I mean, nobody knows. There's no blueprint for this. This is unprecedented in the history of horse racing. You know, you're in March, you're gearing your horse up to race 6 weeks later in the Kentucky Derby and get him to peak that day. And now it's, oops, never mind. You got to wait 4 more months. We have no idea what kind of prep race schedule is going to be out for the new Kentucky Derby, or even if there is going to be a new Kentucky Derby on September 5th. So everybody's just playing it by ear. I mean, I would think if people want to put the horses on the shelf, off. That would be crazy. I mean, you know, keep them racing. Just, you know, keep them on the kind of schedule they keep on now, once a month. There'll be, hopefully there'll be some races to run in, and, you know, we'll figure it out as it goes along. Everybody's just scratching their heads. We don't have the answer. And Bob Baffert, the greatest Kentucky Derby trainer in history, ask him what he's going to do. I'm sure he has the faintest idea. How could he? It's unprecedented. No blueprint. Nobody's ever written a book, How to Get to the Derby 4 months later than you ever thought, for dummies, you know.
Yeah.
It's uncharted waters. But the thing that is very intriguing for me is, you know, just Bill, what you were saying, what blueprint do you utilize? You know, where do you run at this point? It used to be where you peak for the Kentucky Derby. Now it's really going to be interesting because the Kentucky Derby may be the third jewel of the Triple Crown, depending on ultimately what, you know, Stronach and Nari decide to do. And is it going to be, you know, that way going forward? I don't think so, but it's a really unique kind of situation right now where do people hold their horses out of the Preakness and the Belmont in order to run in the Kentucky Derby? Do they run them in the Haskell and give them downtime and then, you know, peak them up again for the Kentucky Derby? There's going to be all kinds of asterisks, I think, when you look at the 2020 year when it comes to racing. And it's going to be really, really interesting for that fourth quarter of the year, third and fourth quarter of the year for racing, because there's going to be grade ones that are becoming fast and furious. And the Eclipse Award votes are going to be really intriguing this year.
You know, we've been talking so much about the Kentucky Derby. We've failed to mention what's going to happen with the Preakness and Belmont. Now, Joe mentioned a little bit earlier on the show that, you know, there is one obvious path. You keep the same order of the races, and you keep the same spacing with the 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then it would be 4 weeks from there, from the end of the Triple Crown, the Belmont, to the Breeders' Cup Classic. Now, in this modern day and age, that's stuffing a lot of races in to a fairly short period of time, but it does seem doable. And we have not heard yet from the Stronach Group from Pimlico or Naira from Belmont. And that leads me to believe, and this is just speculation, but I think it's a fairly safe conclusion, at the very least, they're not ready to immediately sign off on putting their races in those spots. Now, there's, you know, again, so many moving parts. What is NBC doing with college football? I will tell you that on that date, the proposed dates with the 2-3 weeks normal scheduling, they don't have to worry about Notre Dame. On the date that would be the Preakness, Notre Dame plays Western Michigan at 2:30. So that game would be over in plenty of time to broadcast the Preakness. On the day of the Belmont, Notre Dame plays Stanford at 7:30. So you can get the Belmont done with before the Stanford-Notre Dame game comes on. So that's doable. But if I'm from the Stronach Group or from the New York Racing Association right now, I got to take a long, hard look at this and really think about whether or not running these races in September and October is the right thing to do. I can tell you this much with certainty. If they run those races at those days, there's going to be 20,000 people at the track and the handle's going to be off huge. The Preakness and Belmont will not work as far as comparing them to the Preaknesses and Belmonts that we know racing in September and October. It's a totally different animal, and they're going to get killed at the box office, handle, television ratings, everything. Do they want to do it? Do they want to gamble and move the races back a couple weeks, but still try to run them in June and July? The big problem with that, if you do that, what if, you know, you're told by the CDC or the president's office or Governor Cuomo or Governor Hogan in Maryland, you can't run. It's a huge conundrum, and it'll be very interesting to see how they decide to do this.
I think that Naira is in a more precarious position right now than the Stronach Group with regard to the Preakness versus the Belmont. And the reason being is, you know, if I had a three-year-old that was of that caliber, grade one caliber, and my end game was to run in in one of the big races like the Haskell or the new Derby in September, you know, or one of the races later on, I would not want to start him off going a mile and a half right now, whether May or June or even October at that point, because there's no mile and a half race again. Go ahead, Bill.
John, easy solution to that. They just change the distance. There's no reason why the race has to be a mile and a half. If it's not the third leg of the Triple Crown, I guarantee you it will not be run at a mile and a half. It'll be a mile and a quarter. That's the easiest change in the world. I mean, they ran the race at Aqueduct for a couple of years. These things are fluid. They can change it. It doesn't. There's nowhere in set in stone to have to be a mile and a half. That's an easy fix.
Well, they would have to. I mean, saying they would absolutely have to change it. Otherwise, I don't know who else they would get in the race, because why would you want to do that? Why would you want to?
It's not going to happen. It'll be a mile and a quarter, maybe even shorter. Who knows?
Right. But if they change the distance, you know what that would be, Bill? A slippery slope.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Full circle. Okay. Yes. Anyway, but the reason why I think the Shrinik Group can kind of buy their time a little bit right now is they have to let everything develop from the CDC standpoint and also from the pandemic standpoint, and they don't have to make any changes yet on the date. And really, if you're going to run in, let's say they decide that they're going to keep it as is. Well, there's a lot of people that I know that key for the Preakness versus keying for the Kentucky Derby. Maybe the horse just isn't quite one of the top 20 horses in the country, and they're afraid, you know, of shipping him out there and having him run 16th and then not being able to come back 2 weeks later. There's also a lot of people regionally that really prefer, Chuck Zachney is one from Cassius King, that prefers to run his horses in the Preakness because it's his home track, basically, or at least it's close in proximity to his house. And he likes to have, you know, a lot of people there and come and run. The Belmont is such a unique animal, no pun intended, because it's always been the third race in the Triple Crown. And either it's feast or famine. Either you're having a horse that's running for the Triple Crown, mantle, or not. And their numbers show that if there's a horse that's coming in that's won the Preakness and the Kentucky Derby, or they have the two individual horses that have both won those respective races, handle is up. When they have just a bunch of kind of okay horses that need to run a mile and a half, their handle is not nearly as good. So I think that the Belmont is going to have to, or Naira is going to have to change the distance of the Belmont, if not, and or the date of the race, to make it more competitive with some of these other oncoming Grade One races around the third quarter of the year.
I'm going to piggyback on that point too, that I think the Belmont in a normal year is extremely dependent, more so than any other race in the country, upon who shows up and whether or not there's a Triple Crown on the line. You know, I think most people make a kind of spur of the moment decision about whether or not to go to the Belmont. I think there's probably 10,000 people, 20,000 people that will buy tickets ahead of time. I think the vast majority of the crowd decides to show up whether or not there's a Triple Crown on the line, or whether or not, like John said, there's two, the Derby and the Preakness winner going at it. So I think that's going to be dependent upon that, no matter what, if it does remain a last leg of the Triple Crown. The other thing I would say is that I just think, in a general sense, if things are able to return to normal this summer / into the fall, I think people are going to be really, really needing a release and needing these kinds of big events. Like, I understand that there's going to be a lot of trepidation because of the protocols, but I think that people are going to really need to just party and have some drinks and go out and see their friends again. And it's going to be such an interruption to American social life more than anything, that I think while the business of the Triple Crown will suffer a little bit, and if it's run at later dates, I think in general there might be a counterbalance of people who wouldn't normally go if there's a Triple Crown on the line, and now they're going to because they need something to do to release all of this tension that's been building up for months.
Well, Joe, that goes back to the original point I made. Now, obviously the Belmont, if there's a horse going for the Triple Crown, becomes a much bigger event than if it's just horses running in the Belmont. But one thing Naira has done is done a really good job of turning this into an event day, even when a Triple Crown is not on the line. Got this fantastic card with all these Grade One races and the Met Mile and whatnot. And, you know, now they've got concerts out there. And, you know, they're now pulling in a very nice chunk of change between the box office, the handle, etc., on Belmont days that do not include a horse going for the Triple Crown. It's a very, very big day for the New York Racing Association. And I'm sure, you know, basically that and Saratoga are probably the only two things they make any money off of, and everything else is probably a drain on them. Imagine if you have a Belmont run on October 10th and no one is going for the Triple Crown. I'm telling you, they're going to have 10,000 people at the racetrack. No one will care. No one will care whatsoever. The handle will be, you know, down 75% over a normal Belmont. Do they want to take that chance? Now, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, it's an unenviable position to be in because so much of this involves guesswork. But I would say this much. I do think they're thinking it over. I do think they're looking at all options. And I do think they're not immediately ready to sign on for, oh, yes, we'll run the Belmont on October 10th and just, you know, be prepared to have, you know, a real blah day out at the racetrack.
Yeah. I mean, this is wild speculation and guesswork on our part, but it's going to be a lot of that. There's going to be a lot of that going forward because there's going to be little concrete evidence to go on. So we're going to do our best to kind of project forward. I wanted to talk about last week's three-year-old preps because there were a couple interesting horses that ran, namely the two Baffert horses in Nadal and Charlatan. I thought they were both extremely impressive in very different ways. Charlatan, I mean, you want the instant comparisons to Justify makes sense, and we'll see how good he ends up being. But for a horse to start his career in 2020 with buyers of 105 and 106, I mean, that's like basically unheard of at this point. And, you know, he got everything his own way on Saturday. He didn't face any real pressure on the lead. So there wasn't the nose-to-nose acid test that you want to see for a lightly raced horse before you figure out how good they are. But, man, in the stretch, he looked pretty damn powerful to me. And he looks like a really interesting horse. And Nadal, you know, he didn't get as big of a figure. He got a 96 in the Rebel. But talk about a horse that had to work hard every step of the way. You know, from that rail draw, they had to be aggressive with him. And American Theorem went after him in basically a suicide duel. They went 22 and change and 46. And he opened up in the stretch and just held on from a long shot, 82-1 shot from Steve Asmussen to hold on for the win. I love to see that kind of tenacity in young horses. And it brings up an interesting thought. I mean, we'll see if the three of them will stay around until the rescheduled Derby date. But to have a threesome of Authentic, Nadal, and Charlatan, but all three have similar running styles. They're all want to be on the lead. I think it'll be interesting to learn if any of them can rate. And if they do meet up somewhere down the line, that one of them is going to have to. Otherwise, you can have the three best horses in the world. But if they're all speed horses, they're going to cancel each other out. So that's an interesting dynamic for those three.
A couple thoughts here. And definitely, I mean, Baffert, if this was going to be a traditional Kentucky Derby, would be holding as strong a hand as anybody has seen in recent years. Number one, Charlatan. If you could point to any one horse where it may be good news that the Derby is being put off till September, it probably would be for Charlatan. Now, he might be so good that he could come in and pull off the Justify and win the Kentucky Derby in what would be, his fourth lifetime start and not having started as a two-year-old. But, you know, just because Justify did it doesn't mean it's not incredibly hard to do. And we've kind of lost sight of that. You know, now, oh, no big deal. This horse Justify did it after nobody had done it since 1918 with Apollo and all that. Was it 1918 also the last serious pandemic in this country with the something or other?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, there you go. So there's a connection to the pandemics and Apollo and
look
all
at you
that
pulling
sort of
things
stuff.
Into yeah. full circle. Wow.
But it would be a very hard thing to pull off. And you got to think that if you know, racing sticks around and Baffert can manage this horse, get a few more races under his belt, he's going to be that much tougher in the Kentucky Derby in September. And, you know, for all we know, the way Baffert's been rolling these horses out, and we've talked about this before, for all we know, he's got some horse named Glowworm in his barn that is going to debut on, you know, May 1st in an allowance or in a maiden special rate at Churchill Downs, at Santa Anita. And he will become the new flavor of the month. And, you know, it'll be, wow, can Glowworm win the Kentucky Derby after not starting his career till May? Knowing Baffert, that's entirely possible.
Yep, and it would be a new chapter in the history of horse racing. But Nadal, you know, and Joe, you mentioned this before, what an impressive race. I mean, he was pinned to the rail. American Theorem, you know, really pushed him hard in 22 and 4 and 46. And then they got to 6 furlongs, and all of a sudden it was like, whoa, what happened? Nadal found, you know, another gear and American Theorem didn't. And then just coasted down the stretch and was just super impressive. And did it the right way in the Rebel against some legitimate horses in there. Three Technique and Basin, you know, we're both contenders. You know, shameless plug, Nadal was a Keeneland grad. You know, they bought him for $65,000 as a yearling, and Charlatan was also a Keeneland grad. It's a little bit more, $700,000 purchase. But what it shows you is just that Baffert just has an unlimited number of horses to basically take off the bench and throw them in there. And whether it's Glowworm or I'm really hoping for a horse named Topsy Turvy, just so that way Joe can get some credibility on his term.
I've heard a lot of backstretch whispers about Glowworm.
About Glowworm?
Like,
yeah. You know, I didn't see him on the futures though, so that's why I want the futures. That's why that's really why the slippery slope, you know, analogy is involved, because you want to bet on a horse like Glowworm that's not shown there yet. But you know, Nadal was just super impressive, and Charlton was also even more impressive, especially from a figure standpoint. Obviously, didn't run against the same kind of competition that Nadal did in the Rebel, but should be noted that he posted, you know, back to back really impressive races. And you know, who knows if any of those three or all those three are going to be, you know, standing for the you know, for the Kentucky Derby, but all three right now, absolute contenders.
And one thing I wanted to mention about Nadal, just to underscore how impressive his race was, the two horses that were closest to him through the first half mile of the race, and they're not bums. American Theorem had a really nice debut win last year, and then was second in the American Pharoah, and then No Parole, who seemed like a Louisiana Red Terror stepping into open company. Those are the two horses that were closest to Nadal on that pace. American Theorem was beaten 27 and a quarter lengths, and No Parole was beaten 49 lengths, and Nadal won the race. So that's the kind of stuff that really puts into context how strong of an effort it was, that the only horses who could run with him early were basically eased late, and he still had something else in the tank. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with these horses. Like I said, you know, if racing is able to go on, there's going to be spots for them to run in, but do you want to risk running a horse three or four more times before the Derby? And then, you know, assuming we have that Derby day, horse might be out of gas. My guess is that even if there are races to run in, most of these horses will go on the shelf, at least for some period of time. I wanted to segue from that into this week's three-year-old racing. We have the Louisiana Derby, $1 million Louisiana Derby Saturday at the fairgrounds, and a huge field, 14 horses, including Modernist, who won division of the Risen Star. He drew the outside 14 post, and Mr. Modern White, obviously, who won the other division of the Risen Star, is on the shelf, but he's one of those horses that might be able to take advantage if he's able to get back in time for a September Derby and make it when he otherwise wouldn't have been able to. But so obviously a big race at fairgrounds. It's probably a little too recent for trainers to really change their training methods in terms of how they were getting these horses ready for this race. But I wonder if they might want to have them a little extra cranked right now with the future so uncertain for racing. And in general, I wonder if this is more of an end goal for a lot of these guys now than a prep. We also, the race before that, we have the Fairgrounds Oaks, which is a little bit disappointing. We're not going to see British Idiom in the race. Finite is there and drew the outside six posts, and she kind of just looks to lay over the field now. So it's not as much drama as if we would have seen a rematch with British Idiom, but still a couple of pretty nice races Saturday at Fairgrounds.
Well, I think you have to look at there's a couple of horses in here, you know, that are coming in from both divisions of the Risen Star. But one horse that I thought really piqued my interest was Chestertown, who was in a very expensive.
Who, by the way, is owned by one of our sponsors, West Point Thoroughbreds.
Right, we're going to get to them.
Show them some love, John.
That's I'm full service, if not anything else. But he was a $2 million, you know, 2 year old, you know, impeccably bred, and ironically enough, is a New York bred that has, you know, that broke his maiden in Aqueduct. But just the last race that he ran, I know it was an allowance race, and I know that it wasn't the same field as the Risen Star divisions. But man, was that an impressive race! And you know, came home very quickly, had a couple of excuses, and right now is posted at 15-1. So I was a little surprised based on his odds, you know, and I'm assuming it's because he ran just an 80 buyer compared to some of the horses that ran a little bit higher. But you talk about a horse that's kind of peaking right now. You have to look at that Tappet Son.
Owning a multiple graded stakes winning racehorse like Hard Not to Love is attainable with a racing partnership like West Point Thoroughbreds. Partnerships enable you to spread your ownership across several horses for less than it costs to own one horse alone. This increases your racetrack action and chances for a big horse. Check out why West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit our website, westpointtb.com. A little West Point news this week. They have Chestertown, who we mentioned earlier, coming up in the Louisiana Derby. $2 million topper at OBS March. OBS March obviously going on this week. That was a year ago that he was bought there. And 15-1 on the morning line, but probably has a little bit better chance than that. Probably will be bet down from there, especially with the way the West Point guys like to bet. And then also next weekend, Decorated Invader, very good 2-year-old turf horse for them, won the Summer Stakes. He's going to make his 3-year-old debut in the Cutler Bay Stakes on Florida Derby Day at Gulfstream for Christoph Clement. So we wish the best of luck to West Point and the big horses they have running this weekend, and also a good second by Hard Not to Love in the Beholder Mile last week.
Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. So we wanted to touch on the big story from last week as well. Obviously, it got knocked off of the front pages with everything that's going on in the world, but the doping scandal is obviously still going to be a major story in racing going forward. We talked about Jorge Navarro and Jason Service to a large extent last week, but I mean, there was an additional charge this week of money laundering to Alfredo Lechoa, who's a trainer at Gulfstream Park in Florida. My guess is that there's going to be some more indictments trickling in as well. I'm not going to say that they're happy about the coronavirus being on the front page, but I got to think there's a lot of people breathing a sigh of relief that they're no longer national news for being busted for drugging horses. But that's why I think it's even more important for us to keep the pressure up during these weeks, because regardless of what happens with the virus, it's going to be a big, big deal for racing, and the implications are going to be longstanding. So I'll open it up to you guys and what you guys have left over from last week.
Well, this answered a question that everybody was sort of asking when this thing came down, which now seems like about 35 years ago or something like that. If you remember when they had the press conference and the people from the government spoke up for the first time, they said, we weren't looking at horse racing. This fell into our lap as we were investigating something else. And nobody quite understood what they meant for that. And they haven't said as much, anybody from the FBI or the U.S. Attorney's Office, but it's pretty easy to connect the dots now. They were looking at money laundering, which is, you know, serious stuff compared to horse racing. And it involved this Alfredo Lechoa guy. I don't even know how to pronounce it. I never heard of the guy. And he was a trainer in Florida. And then he was involved with a guy who at one point in time owned some horses. And as President Trump would say, they were some bad hombres. They got involved with some money launderers out of South America and were telling them that, we can launder your money through his horseman's account. So, that connected the dots. I don't know if there's going to be more money laundering to come out. I don't know if there's going to be more names to come out in the horse racing part of it. But we did learn something out of that. And I think we now understand that, I imagine as if they were tapping Lechoa's phone, and if I'm not pronouncing that right, damn it, I don't care. But, maybe they heard us. Oh, yeah, you think I'm good at this juice and stuff. You ought to see what this Jorge Navarro and Jason Service guy does. I mean, something of that ilk, or maybe, that's a crazy scenario, but maybe it's not. And then they, turn around and say, let's see what's up with Mr. Navarro and Mr. Service. I think that makes a lot more sense than just one day the FBI decided to look into doping and horse racing, something that they probably don't give two cents about.
Ironic, the irony of irony on this whole Lechoa thing is that, they said, let's give him horses because he's such a top, trainer. And he was, what would you say, he was one for?
Yeah, that he could win all this purse money and right. stuff, and that would help them launder the money.
Because he was juicing the horses. That's
right,
what
because he was juicing.
Not that any of this stuff is funny, but I mean, who was scamming whom in this thing? Because the Lechoa and some of these other guys on the U.S. side were telling the bad hombres in Brazil and whatnot and Venezuela that we can launder their money because this guy's such a great horse trainer and juicing his horses. This guy was the worst trainer that ever lived. He was 1 for 51 on the year. If he's juicing and he's still 1 for 51, imagine how
he's doing it the wrong way.
If he didn't juice, he would have been 0 for 51. Oh my gosh, you can't make it up.
So that's going to be it for this week's episode of the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Bill Finley and John Green in the studio for holding down the fort. Just a little programming note going forward. I'm going to be set up with a mobile podcast unit, so I'll be able to broadcast from home going forward. And we're going to try to pump out content in the same way that we usually do, just to keep you guys entertained. We want everybody to stay safe. And at the end of the day, take precautions, take responsibility for everybody in your community, especially the most vulnerable. And we will talk to you next week.